Okay, having driven the Range Rover Sport, let me ask you this. If the Range Rover Sport was a band, what would it be?
Probably the Wu-Tang Clan.
Wu-Tang Clan, okay.
And as we know, the Wu-Tang Clan ain't nothing to, well, mess with.
And if it was an actor?
Yo, that's a good one. Probably Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis.
Yeah, yeah. Bruce Willis, big, bold, powerful. Yeah.
Back in the day, but Bruce Willis.
Back in the day, Bruce Willis. Not Bruce Willis of now. Because Bruce Willis of now is a bit lame.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Leisure Wheels podcast. Today we're going to be talking about some of the cars that we've been driving lately, which is the Range Rover Sport, the FJ Cruiser, the Subaru XV, and the little Nissan Juke 1.5 diesel. So let's get straight into it and talk about the Range Rover Sport. So what did you think of it, Gerard?
The Range Rover Sport. Well, oddly enough, first time ever in a Range Rover or something wearing a Range Rover badge. It's mind-blowing.
It's mind-blowing. Like, you can't believe that a vehicle can do that.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely sensational. I mean, I've seen all the overseas reviews, read the local stuff, Oak's saying that, you know, it handles beautifully, it's so ridiculously fast, and you sort of think to yourself, could be, but it's still a Range Rover. It's a big, fat, oversized thing. It can't behave like a sports car, but it's just the way it goes, and it's magnificent.
It is magnificent.
And then you also have that lovely noise. It's such a dirty V8 noise.
It is like a dirty V8, like this burly, shouty, obnoxious kind of sound, but obnoxious in a good way.
Like, exactly,
it's fun.
Like, I think it was about 5 minutes after they delivered it to the office, we just had to go downstairs and start it up. And even from, I would guess it's about 150 meters away, you could hear it inside the office going like, bah, 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 bah.
It just puts a grin on your face. You don't even have to drive it. You just sit in it, you just start, and it's just a lovely sound.
And a magnificent noise.
I mean, it really is magnificent in the sense that you get vehicles that are very good on-road, and you get very good vehicles off-road, but it's tough to combine the two.
Yeah.
Like, the Range Rover Sport, for instance, it's got more than 500 millimeters of wheel articulation and about 280 millimeters of ground clearance.
Mm.
To have that and be able to corner effectively on tar is just an amazing thing. I don't know how they do it.
It's just, and the way it hurls itself at the horizon, it's just, you can't believe a car that big can do it that fast.
Mm.
It's, I mean, I remember being in high school when, not the V8 M3, the one before that, the last of his six-cylinder M3s, the naturally aspirated, when those cars came out. And I still remember they had an acceleration time of 0 to 100 in 5.3 seconds. I'll never forget that.
And that was
stupid fast.
Mm.
And that's what the Range Rover does.
That's what it does.
5.3 seconds, 0 to 100.
It's amazing.
It's insanely fast.
It really is amazing. And like you say, the fact that they can do that in a vehicle that is that big.
Yeah.
Because they've made it 420 kilograms lighter than the previous model, but this is still a big vehicle. It's heavy.
Yeah. No, it's not a lightweight car. I mean, it's not a Range Rover Superleggera. It's still a fat car.
Absolutely.
it's a case of power corrupting absolutely, I suppose. Like, yes, there's just no way you can argue with how much power does that? It's 375 kilowatts.
375 kilowatt and 625 newton meters of torque.
Just
which is
you
insane.
Just can't argue with that. Like, you can't. You could put that in a house and it would still do like 0 to 107 seconds.
I was at the launch of it last year, the international launch, and there they actually put us on a runway. And we got to accelerate to 100 miles an hour and back to zero. So that's like 0 to 160 and back to zero. And it was about 15 seconds.
Mm.
That's all it took this vehicle to go up to 160 and back down to zero, which is just mind-boggling. And then straight off from there, you go onto a 4x4 track. And it's a seriously capable 4x4. Mm. I think you'd have to be insane to take your million rand Range Rover onto a 4x4 trail, but if you've got the money, you can do it. It'll survive.
And you've also got the money to pay for the petrol.
The petrol is, it's insane.
Yeah. I think we were averaging, according to the trip computer, we were averaging around 15.9 or something.
Mm. But also, you could probably do better if you drove it just sedately, but it's impossible.
But why?
You would get you want into to? That with yeah. that engine and you just can't help yourself.
Yeah, it's... You can't help it. It immediately transforms into something, into somebody evil. That's probably why so many baddies drive them.
Like, yes, it really does bring out the bad bits.
Dark side.
But I mean, there are more sensible engines. You've got the 3-liter diesel.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the 3-liter petrol supercharged.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got the V8 diesel. So there are a lot of more sensible options. But if you're going to buy a Range Rover Sport, I don't know why.
No.
You buy the 5-liter supercharged. That's the engine that kind of vehicle has. It doesn't make sense if you've got a Discovery 3-liter diesel in there. It just doesn't feel right.
I just think if you're going to be sensible, why not just buy a Discovery?
Just
go for a Discovery. The world doesn't need the Range Rover Sport.
Mm. But it's a better place for it.
But it's a better place for it, yeah. A Discovery is a car you need to go off-roading or to fit kids in.
It's practical.
But a Range Rover Sport is a car you want.
It's like deliciously over the top. Everything about it. It's just so much opulence, but it's fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, very, very expensive. The one we had is above a million rand.
I think it was 1.25 something. It was around about, say, it was almost 1.3 million.
So, expensive, but relative to what you'd be paying for anything else, it's not ridiculously priced if you look at the competition. Like it's right there with the Porsche Cayenne and the kind of immediate competition. So I don't think it's badly priced, but it is just, it's an expensive vehicle. But when you get into it, you see the expensive, you don't feel cheated. Like you feel this really is a million rand vehicle. It's just got everything you want, everything you need. Everything is so wonderfully soft touch and comfortable and simple. I like the layout of it in general. It's quite clean, elegant designs, not too cluttered.
Mm.
The Porsche Cayenne, for instance, I like that vehicle, but the one thing I don't like is there's too many buttons in that center console. It has a very cluttered feel. In a way, I suppose some people think it's kind of cool because it's almost like a jet cockpit or something that you get into. There's so many switches and buttons and dials, but it's cluttered. Whereas the
Range Rover
is just simple and elegant and easy.
Minimalist, yeah.
Everything makes sense.
It's easy to understand. You know, it's actually a hard car to fault because I remember I spent a day, I drove it home and back, and I kept on thinking I need to find something wrong with this car. And in the end, I resorted to, the tiny faults and whatever. And I wanted to adjust the steering wheel. And you reach for the left-hand side of a steering wheel looking for that button for the electrical adjustment. I thought to myself, aha! no electrical adjustment on a 1.3 million
Which
rand
is
car,
unlikely.
Which is unlikely. So I felt on the right-hand side and there it was. So can't even fault it on that.
No, Land Rover is doing impressive things.
That is. And if you look at what's coming, it's only going to get more impressive, I think.
And what I like about the Range Rover Sport, well, this generation is, the previous one was a bit of a mess, I thought.
Mm.
Firstly, it was built on the chassis of the Disco 4.
Mm.
So it looked aggressive and sporty, but it wasn't nearly as sporty as it should be with that sport badge.
Mm.
And also, it just looked a bit ostentatious and over the top.
Mm.
It looked like a footballer's car, a gangster's car.
Mm.
Whereas this new one, I think it looks aggressive, it looks really cool, but at the same time, you can picture a family driving it. It's not as obnoxious as the old Range Rover Sport was.
Mm.
I think it's more of a luxurious vehicle that's sporty. It's like Range Rover first and sporty second.
Mm. I think that the one thing that the Sport has done is it's making the Evoque look so much smaller.
Mm.
Like, because it's got that Evoque styling. But if you park it right next to an Evoque, you'll notice how small an Evoque actually is. I think it looks better, actually.
I also think of the three, I think the Sport's the best looking one.
Yeah.
And what I also wrote the other day in one of my reviews was, it seems to make it a little bit pointless to buy a normal Range Rover. Like, yeah. Why would you want the Range Rover unless you're going to be chauffeured in the back?
Mm.
Why would you buy a Range Rover? Because of the way the Range Rover Sport's been set up, it's so much more fun to drive. It's a more nimble vehicle than the big Range Rover. So it's got almost everything that the Range Rover's got. I mean, I can't really think of anything that the Range Rover offers you above the Sport.
Actually, even if you're going to be driven in the back, like the one we had, I'm not 100% sure if it was standard or not, but the one we had came with screens in
the back, the 10.2-inch in the headrests, and it's got climate wireless control, headphones.
Yeah, heated seats, all of it in the back. So, yeah, it's actually hard to make a case for the Range Rover. Mm. Unless you know that thing about, you know, you want to have the best sort of thing. Range Rover still sits at the top.
Have you driven the Cayenne?
No.
Never driven the Cayenne. Because I think that's kind of the big comparison. It's like, and to me, I don't know. I mean, it's a ridiculously fast vehicle, the Range Rover Sport. It's a lot of fun to drive, but the Cayenne seems a bit more driver-focused to me.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the Range Rover Sport is kind of Range Rover first, Sport second.
Mm.
I think you can get more out of a Range Rover Sport.
Mm.
It's still quite a sedate vehicle. Like, you can just kind of waft along quite easily.
Mm.
And I think there's more that you can do with it, and I think they are actually going to do that.
Yeah.
There are rumors that they're going to be bringing out some kind of Range Rover Sport RS version or something. I think you could make that a properly hot SUV. But as it stands, I think it's more of an all-rounder than the Cayenne. The Cayenne is a performance SUV, and it handles terrifically well, and it's fun to drive, but it doesn't have the off-road capability of the Range Rover, and also it's not as plush. It doesn't have that special feeling that a Range Rover does. When you get into a Range Rover, it really feels special inside. Where Cayenne, I mean, it's fantastic inside and it's lovely, but it just doesn't have that kind of very special feeling with those little touches that just say this is the ultimate in luxury. So why I think if you were to take them around a track, I think the Cayenne might still take it. Like that Cayenne Turbo is an insane thing.
Yeah.
That's a scary vehicle. But in every other regard, I just don't think the Cayenne can compare with the Sport at the moment.
Mm-mm. It's going to be interesting to see what Porsche comes up with to replace the Cayenne, actually.
Mm.
I mean, when the second generation came out, they were so far ahead of everybody else in terms of engineering of what you can make an SUV do at high speed. And now with the introduction of the Macan, they've proven once again that it's possible to make a small SUV actually feel like a hatch. If the international reports are to
believe. I'm so excited. I was actually reading a report today, and they said, the guy actually said he just didn't believe the reports. He said, sure, it must be good, but it's still an SUV. And he says, it just feels so nimble. It feels like a sports car, like a 911 or something. You can't believe how that McCann actually wraps around you and how agile it feels. There's no roll. It is really a little sports car. Good.
So
I'm very excited.
Yeah. It's finally at a point in history where, you know, SUVs are starting to feel like sports cars. It's insane.
And also, I think Range Rover, they're very strong at the moment, and they've kind of got the playing field in terms of ultimate SUV luxury to themselves. You think of ultimate SUV luxury, you kind of go towards Range Rover nowadays. But there's a lot of competition coming, like Rolls-Royce, Bentley, and then in terms of kind of the sporty SUVs like the Range Rover Sport is, you've got the Lamborghini Urus coming, and Aston Martin apparently considering building its own SUV. So clearly there's money to be made here, and they're going to have to keep like really working to stay the leaders here, because the competition's improving.
It's kind of weird how the SUV is suddenly becoming the body shape people want to have. I did research on this for last month's edition on a shootout on two small SUVs. And the research basically stated that people are massively into SUVs at the moment.
Especially in countries like China, Russia.
Exactly, yeah. Mm. You know, wealth status, that elevated driving position. Mm. The strange thing is, however, like 87% of women prefer an SUV to a normal car.
It's amazing.
Like it's a win-win for everybody.
Like, I think it makes more sense. It's so much easier to put your stuff in the back if you've got like grocery bags and things, because your boot's higher.
Mm.
It's so much easier to just slide things in there. And I think the higher ride height gives you a bit of confidence as well.
Mm.
You feel more of a victim when you're just sitting so low to the ground. When you've got the higher ride height and you can see what's happening in front of you and next to you, it's a better feel. So I think for a lot of people, they like those aspects. Yeah. It's not really about the 4x4 aspect of it. They don't care if it has four-wheel drive or anything like that. They just want the size and the high ride height and those things.
Because you feel safe. And actually, strangely enough, that's another topic I looked into, is the safety aspect. Is it's true that you're safer in a bigger car. I mean, it just makes sense if you think about the physics involved.
Mm.
But then you had the other side of the coin, which is SUV is more likely to roll and whatever.
Yes.
But with stuff like the Range Rover Sport and the Cayenne, that's not true anymore. Like,
you'll have to mess it up completely to roll that thing.
You have to make a complete hash up of it to get that, to land that Range Rover on its roof. Let me tell you. It's interesting.
No, it's an amazing vehicle.
Mm.
And we did a video on it as well, which we'll hopefully have up on the website soon, showing what it can do. But it really is an impressive vehicle.
You have to check that out to listen to the noise as well.
Yes, the noise is amazing.
Mm.
But let's move on. Let's look at the next vehicle, which is the FJ Cruiser. Now, that's the first time you've really driven it, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's just, I drove it on launch, which was, it was such a short route.
It's always such a controlled environment. You don't really get a true sense of it.
Yeah. Now, it's the first time I actually got to drive it on a day-to-day basis. I quite like it, actually.
I love that vehicle. I mean, I have such a soft spot for it. And it's just one of those things where a lot of about it doesn't make sense, and yet it's a bit impractical. But for some reason, I've always loved that vehicle, and I wouldn't mind buying one, owning one for a second. For some reason, I just really love it. Whenever I'm in that vehicle, once again, I'm just so impressed with it, and I just love spending time in it.
Mm. I think it's quite a cult car. Like, you have to really love it in order to buy it.
Yes.
I love the idea of it. I mean, it feels like a big Donka toy. Like, even the dials and everything on the inside.
Yes.
And I love the way it has three wipers.
Yes. Like, for some because reason, it's so just wide and so low, the windscreen, that the only way they can actually do it is three wipers, which is cool.
Yeah, no, that's quite a lacquer car. And it also hustles if you really step on it.
Mm.
I mean, that 4-litre petrol V6 is also quite a lovely thing.
Mm. It is a bit impractical in some senses. Like you mentioned, that 4-litre petrol engine's thirsty.
Mm.
So that's a big issue.
Mm.
But they've actually addressed that. If you can call it addressing it. What they've done is just given it double the fuel capacity. So where it used to have, the previous generation one had a 75-litre tank, it's now got a 150-litre tank.
Yeah.
And so actually, it's no more fuel efficient, but it feels more fuel efficient because you're not going to the petrol station that often. So it's easier to live with.
It's a psychological thing.
It's totally a psychological thing.
You're not paying less for petrol. You're just paying less often for petrol.
So it's silly, but it helps.
But and how's that thing off-road? Like I said, launches are controlled environments. Mm. Have you taken it off-road properly?
We've done quite a bit in it, and it's amazing. If you look at it, it almost looks like one of the softer Land Cruisers.
Mm-hmm.
You look at that and you think that can't possibly compare with a Land Cruiser 70 series or something like that. But it's actually amazing. It's got the best ground clearance of any Land Cruiser, which is amazing.
Mm.
And it's got a nice short wheelbase. So it's very nice and maneuverable on a tight 4x4 track. And then obviously it's got a rear diff lock. It's got low range. And it just feels really capable. And it's got traction control systems. It's even got a new little system where you set the speed that you want to, and you can take your feet off the accelerator, off the brake. It climbs up inclines, it climbs down inclines. A lot of these systems aren't that great because they still go too quickly. The system just, even the minimum speed that it'll set is too fast for proper rock crawling, but not in this one. It really crawls slowly up and down slopes, so it's lovely. And that's what I like about it, is it's a phenomenally capable off-roader. Like, you can really put that up against some of the best 4x4s out there, like a Wrangler or something like that. But at the same time, it's easy to live with. I think it's one of the easiest hardcore 4x4s to live with, because that 4-liter engine is so refined. It's a nice, soft, comfortable, easy drive in town. It's not uncomfortable. It's not loud. It's just so easy to live with. And then if you want to go 4x4ing, it's phenomenal.
What are the main changes on the 2014 model? Because that's the reason we drove it again. It's that's like
what I've just mentioned. That's all of the changes. So there's double the fuel capacity and that little system that allows the controlled climbing and descending. And that's it. So it's very basic. I mean, it's not really the same kind of vehicle as, say, the Prado is, or any of the other Toyota vehicles, in the sense that this was kind of a once-off vehicle that was created as a celebration of the Land Cruiser heritage. It's not a vehicle that's going to see a second or a third generation. They've made a couple of changes to it every year, like little tweaks here and there. But it's going to be a vehicle that essentially disappears. It's not a long-term vehicle with the Prado where you're going to have generation after generation. Apparently in the US, they're already looking at discontinuing it. So like you say, it's a cult vehicle, and it'll only become more of a cult vehicle because they're going to stop making them. They're going to stop selling them, and all we're going to have are the ones that are already around. So I think they're going to become proper collector's items in a couple of years.
What I like about that car is when we first saw images of it, it was years and years ago.
It's been around since 2008, around there. We got it very late in its life, actually, but it's been around for a long time now.
When rumors started surfing that they were going to do an homage to the Land Cruiser, I remember it was press picks on with a car with surfboards and on, you know, they're building it for surfers, whatever. We were expecting it to be quite expensive, you know, around 600,000 back then. And still, these days, what's it retailing for? I think it's under 500,000.
Yeah, it's still like kind of double cab, bucky, Hilux kind of money, which is fantastic value for money.
Yeah, considering what you get.
It's still around, like, you would pay for a fortune or something like that. So, good value for money, but then, I suppose, especially if you're a family or you want to overland as a family, it's not that practical. You probably realize those doors are annoying, because you have to open the front doors in order to open the rear door. So, if you have kids that you have to drop off at school or something like that, it's annoying. It's not really a family vehicle in the way that a Prado or a Fortune or even a Hilux is. But it's a fun little vehicle for a couple.
Yeah. I think those suicide doors make it a bit more practical.
At least you can get in the back.
That, like, if you do have two or three friends you want to drive around with you on the odd occasion, it's fine.
Yes. But
living with it day to day, I think getting a baby seat in and out of it would be a mission.
So yeah, it has its bad points, but generally speaking, I think it's a lovely vehicle, especially if you plan on 4x4ing a lot.
Yeah, you better get one now before they stop making it. It's going to be a sad day when they announce.
Yes, we're done.
It's no longer,
All right, let's talk about the little Nissan Juke. Now that's the Juke, that's a vehicle that you're not too crazy about.
Yeah, I don't really understand it. I do understand what it's for. It's a compact crossover.
And it's selling well. It's been a success for Nissan.
My main issue with the car was the way it looks. Don't like the way it looks.
I mean, it is very controversial, the styling. There's no doubt about it.
And it used to be only available with a 1600 petrol naturally aspirated engine or 140 kilowatt turbocharged.
Same engine, just with a turbo.
And, that engine was so heavy on fuel. I remember testing it years ago. Like, I couldn't get it below 12 liters per 100 kilometers, which,
for a tiny little crossover like that.
Yeah.
You look at the price of the vehicle, which at that time was like, I think, 250.
Yeah.
But then the fuel consumption is just disproportionate to the type of vehicle it is.
Like, a person who can afford a 250,000 rand car is not going to be impressed if he can't get it to get below. But They've sort of addressed the issue by adding a 1.5 turbo diesel to the range.
Which is an engine we know because we've driven it in a couple of vehicles.
In a couple of vehicles so far. Magnificent little engine. I mean, it's so torquey and so responsive. From low down, it's a magnificent thing.
It's the same engine as in the Qashqai. And what did we drive recently with
the Duster? Well?
The Duster.
Well. Yeah. Mm. Little less power in the Duster.
What's it like? 80 kilowatt more or less, hey?
Yeah. In the Duster, it's a little bit less power. Mm. But not,
more or less, yeah.
You wouldn't actually notice it, I think. So that sort of addressed the main issue with the Juke, because let's be honest, if you buy a car, you spend most of your time on the inside and you don't have to look at it. On the inside, I don't actually mind the Juke. I think it's one of the most progressive interiors out there. It's got, you know, that nifty feature where you can either select drive or the air conditioning
setting. And you can see what kind of lateral G's you're pulling and things.
Yeah, in a Juke, can you believe it? Like, okay.
And it's got that center console that looks like fuel tank of a motorcycle.
Which is, it's like, the Juke handles decently enough, but it's not a motorcycle or a sports car.
But it's quite out there in terms of design, so I think.
Yeah, and
it's very much aimed at young people.
Yeah, who enjoy that kind of thing. I think maybe it's because I'm getting close to 30 that, you know, I actually don't like looking at it.
It's too much,
yeah. But overall, it was a decent car. Like, I actually quite liked it, and I liked living with it, and I just didn't like looking at it. But I suppose style is
subjective.
Yeah, it's a very personal thing. The other thing is obviously price. I think the one we drove, it's a 1.5 diesel front wheel drive.
Mm.
It's around about 260,000,
okay,
thereabouts. And for 10 grand less than it, you can have a Renault Duster, which we drove recently.
And that's a lovely
with
vehicle.
With all-wheel drive and navigation and all of that as standard.
Very
bad navigation, because it doesn't acknowledge the existence of cops or whip or...
Or even the bigger towns.
Wasn't on there. Like, it just refuses to accept. Even when you're in the town, it refuses to accept that it's there. But
a lovely vehicle.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, it's solid.
A bit more practical as well. Mm. So, like, if you're thinking in terms of practicality, I'd go for a Duster. But if you're a funky young person, you know, single, whatever, you want to show the world, this is my car, which... You know, a car is always an extension of someone's personality, I suppose. Mm. Like, if you're an extrovert, go for a Juke.
Absolutely.
The other thing worth mentioning is that Nissan has already shown a facelift for the Juke.
Oh, yes. Overseas. I know that's coming.
So, that's coming in a few months.
But that seems very subtle. Like,
it does, though.
Small changes.
Yeah, small changes. They've given it, or seem to have given it, the headlights from a 370Z, or that sort of effect at the front.
Okay.
So...
That's interesting.
It looks even more aggressive than it already does. But
cool.
Yeah. And it seems they're going in an aggressive direction.
Be interesting to see how they sell those little diesels, because I think in that very small crossover section, as with, say, hatches and that kind of vehicle, it's more petrol sales than diesel, which is a shame, because I think the diesel is the pick of the bunch.
Exactly.
It would be a mistake not to go for something else. And I think you look at the kilowatt, on it, and it's not a lot compared to the others, but the torque is so amazing, and it's the torque you feel when you accelerate. It's actually a lot of fun. It's a great vehicle.
The thing is, we've driven all of these compact crossovers recently, all of them.
2008
Eco Sport, and the Eco Sport and the 2008 were both petrol. Pick out of all of the compact crossovers in South Africa at the moment has to be that Duster. Just because of that diesel engine and what you're getting for what
you're
paying.
That's best value for money, no doubt.
All of the others are front-wheel drive, where Renault will sell you a car for less money than the others retail for with four-wheel drive, a top-spec model for...
And decent space.
Yeah.
I mean, we traveled quite a bit in it, and we had plenty of space and...
An awesome fuel
consumption. It's a sensible car.
I know, that's definitely the one to go for.
But I suppose, it doesn't have the wild looks that the others have. It's just not going to appeal to young people the way that a Juke or an Eco Sport or
and
something like that's going to.
I think people still don't regard it as a premium product sort of thing. No, though it's, I mean, the quality on the inside of the Duster isn't... It's
possible.
It's possible, yeah. Mm. But it,
you can sense that this is a Dacia. It's not a Renault in the sense that that you have in the other ones.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel quite like a Renault. It feels like a cheaper version.
Yeah.
But it's fine for what it is. I mean, it's literally... It's actually a Dacia Duster with just the badges replaced. It is... standard Dacia in there, but it's
absolutely
fine.
In love with the Duster. I think it's, I wrote 2 weeks ago, I think it's, you know, the best bargain in South Africa at the moment, at the price they're selling it at. And, you know, it can't compete in terms of premium interior with the 208 or the Duke, but for what you're getting, it's a pretty nifty car.
And while we're on the Duster, it's worth mentioning where you're off to tomorrow. Tell us a little bit about what you're going to be doing.
I can't actually tell you too much about what I'm going to be doing.
Yeah. Under embargo.
I'm under embargo, but I will be flying to, I suppose I can tell people I'm going to Namibia.
I think that's fine.
I'm going to Namibia, and I'm going to climb in a Duster, and I'm going to drive basically through Namibia to a few spots. And while I'm there, I'm going to be doing something interesting, which I can't tell you about at all, because I've been embargoed. But you can read about it in a future edition. I think in about 2 months' time.
And you've never been to Namibia, so it's going to be fun.
Never been there before. And if you told me a month ago I'm going in a Duster, I would have laughed at you. But now I'm out on a mission to prove what the Duster can do.
Well, I hope
One of the reasons we're going is to see how far we can push a Duster.
That's going
to
be great. I'm looking forward to seeing how it performs. A lot of people have been asking for a proper 4x4 review of the Duster to see how far it can go.
And that's so it's going to be interesting, yeah. No, I don't think I'll be able to get it up a dune.
Yeah. It's going to be difficult.
It's a bit down on power for that, but...
It depends on the dune.
Yeah. Well, maybe if it's a dune that's like 500 millimeters high, I could probably get it over there. So I could probably drive it over a sandcastle, but yeah. We'll have to wait and see.
We'll see how it does.
Mm.
Okay, let's quickly chat about the last vehicle, which is our little long-term Subaru XV.
Yeah.
You've been spending the most time with it, eh?
Most time with it, yeah.
So how have you been finding it?
Well, that car is... It's quite good, actually. We've got a plasma green one, which is quite shouty and a bit out there. Mm. It draws a lot of attention. But in terms of living with it day-to-day, it's been... quite lacquer. One or two issues with it. One of them is fuel consumption.
Yes.
But it is new and it is slowly going down. It started at, I think it was hovering around 9.5 and thereabouts. And we're on the brink of getting it to below 9 litres per 100 kilometres. Cool. The other issue is...
Which isn't bad if you consider it's a petrol vehicle with a 2-litre engine.
Yeah, no, it's not bad at all.
It's all-wheel drive. You're looking at a lot of all-wheel drive vehicles. Fuel consumption is surprisingly high for their size. So, like you say, I think in time it's going to be quite impressive.
Yeah, no, I think we're going to get it very close to what Subaru claims it can do. And the other thing is the CVT transmission, which is more a case of me having to adapt
to the driving style. Yeah, you have to.
Yeah, you have to if you're looking at long-term ownership. What I've found is it doesn't like to be rushed. It likes to get to... it can do, you know, highway speeds and but it can be...
It hates when you just put your foot down.
Yeah, it doesn't like that at all. It likes to get up to speed slowly, like leisurely sort of car to drive. To live with it day to day has been awesome. I mean, we just had a baby 6 weeks ago.
How's the space with that vehicle? Because it seems a little bit cramped for a crossover. You look at you open up the boot.
Yep.
And it doesn't seem that big.
The thing is, I was worried about that because driving around with a baby, you have to...
They come with many stuff.
Yes, like you wouldn't believe. I mean, a baby is like 50 centimeters long, but like it comes with a lot of stuff. It's like a Range Rover, you know, a lot of standard kit. But in the boot, we can fit, currently we can put a pram in there. And his overnight bag, and a few bags worth of shopping. And
you can get him in the back as well. So there is enough space for two. I mean, we haven't gone away for a weekend or anything. Mm. We're still too young for that. But we will be going away shortly. So then we'll see properly
how it does. The space is like.
But at the moment, it is quite lucky to live with it because it's soft and comfortable. Mm. And, you know, speaking as a dad, there's not much more you can ask
for. Mm.
Also, it's quite a safe vehicle.
Mm,
it's
lots got of a safety 5-star
safety rating, which is important. Now, I've been enjoying my time with it. As I keep saying, like, it's one or two issues, but nothing really that would keep me from recommending it to anybody who's looking for a car in that segment.
We need to do some more 4x4ing with it. We've done some, I think it's actually more capable. Like, the stuff we've done, it can do far more than that. Mm. Especially with that 220mm ground clearance, same as the Forester. That's a lot. So I think we need to get it out there and see what it can do, because I think it's a great all-round vehicle. It handles like a hatch almost in town, and it's easy to live with, but it's a proper little off-road vehicle. I mean, it doesn't have low range, and it's not going to do serious 4x4 trails, but it's capable.
I actually filmed it on a gravel road a few weeks ago. I think that video is also up on our website.
Mm, it is, yeah.
Mistaken, yeah. And on a gravel road, you can sort of sense that Subaru DNA.
Mm.
I mean, like...
it feels so sure-footed on the gravel. I love driving that thing on gravel.
No, it's such a lucky car to live with.
It's like a little rally car on gravel.
Mm. It's so much fun.
Gives you so much confidence behind the wheel.
Exactly, yeah. That symmetrical all-wheel drive system is it's quite lucky.
Mm.
Now, I've been enjoying my time with the car. As you said, we're getting along nicely. And I mean... And in terms of, because it's a long-term car, so it's really, it's an ownership experience.
Mm.
In terms of owning it so far, it's really been absolutely fantastic. I'm glad it's part of our fleet.
Yeah, no, it's great. So I think that's it. That's all the vehicles we wanted to talk about this week.
Mm.
Let's hope the trip is a success. Good luck with that.
Yeah, thank you.
Let us know how the Duster does.
Yeah.
And we'll chat again next week once you're back.
Mm.
And you can tell us all about it.
I can tell you the parts I can tell you, and I can't wait to see what that Duster does.
So some of it you still won't be able to tell us?
No, still not. We've been embargoed till October, the 15th of October or something like that.
Okay, wow.
For one part of the trip.
When whatever happens on whatever medium it happens on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then I'm allowed to tell you about that part of the trip.
All right.
But next week, the rest...
But I mean, the part that really applies to us anyway. You can tell us about next week.
I can tell you about that next week. Yeah.
So that's going to be cool.
I can even give you some hints as to what...
What
I might have been doing.
Cool. Well, enjoy it. Best of luck. Enjoy Namibia.
Thanks,
bro. And we'll chat again next week.
Mm.
Cheers.
Cheers.